Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Let's be honest. Doubleheader on Monday Night Football, but everybody is going to be reacting this morning, and everybody was reacting last night to how bad the Dallas Cowboys looked in the first game of the Andy Dalton era. If Dak Prescott was watching this, and I'm sure he was, as he recovers from his surgery, I'm sure that he thought to himself, my goodness, I have got the best negotiating leverage in the history of mankind, because I know it wasn't all Andy Dalton's fault, and there was certainly a lot going awry in this game. But all of the shots of sad Cowboy fans that they kept showing during the course of the game, I mean, this is an atrocious football team. And at least for 1 week, what you saw was, it felt to me like Dak Prescott had been holding this team together on the offensive side of the ball. Now their offensive line has fallen apart. The defense is just atrocious. This is a bad football team. And there are a lot of bad football teams right now in the NFC East. And prior to this game, I thought that the NFC East champ would have to get to 8 wins and at a minimum would have to get to 7 wins. I think it's possible that the NFC East champ goes 6-10. I really do. The Dallas Cowboys are sitting right now at 2-4, and I just think a lot of these bad NFC East teams are going to split, and we're going to see a lot of mediocrity within the conference, even against each other. In other words, I don't think anybody's going to go 6-0 in this conference, in this division, of and be able to take control for that reason. But man, watching that game last night, I just thought to myself over and over again, I don't know how many games the Cowboys are going to win. And it's crazy, but if you're a Washington football team fan, or if you are a fan of, I mean, if you're a fan of the Eagles, if you're a fan of even the Giants, you're not that far out of first place. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are still in first place in this division at 2-4. And if you're sitting around, and I believe I'm correct about this, Dub, you can let me know. I think the Giants are 1-5. I haven't even paid that much attention to them. But they finally got a win, and you know, if what's crazy is, if they had won that game against the Cowboys, and they very easily could have won that game, they'd be in first place right now. And I think everybody's like, man, the Giants are awful this year, but the entirety of the NFC East is just an unmitigated disaster. It's a dumpster fire of epic proportions. And I don't know how many games the Cowboys win going forward, because to me, if you look at what they have remaining on their schedule, I mean, you're talking about the 2-4 Dallas Cowboys, the 1-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles, and everybody made fun of the Eagles when they found a way to tie the Bengals, but they may end up winning the division over that tied game. The Giants are 1-5, and Washington is 1-5, and all of those teams are really bad. And, you know, to me, you look forward and think, okay, where are we going from here? First of all, where we're going is Thursday Night Football, which is the Giants and the Eagles. 1-5 against 1-4-1. So whoever can win that football game will find themselves in somewhat decent position, crazily enough, in the NFC East. And of course, the wildest thing about all of this is that those teams get to host a home playoff game. So a home playoff game may not matter that much this year, considering many places may not have substantial crowds, probably most. But I mean, you look at the Cowboys right now, they're 2-4, and this is one of the worst losses in modern history for the Cowboys. I don't think there's any other way to put it. To have the Arizona Cardinals come into town, credit to Kyler Murray getting to play back in the stadium that he's played a lot in as both a Big 12 quarterback with the Oklahoma Sooners and also as a quarterback in Texas high school football. But the Cowboys go on the road against Washington. Then they go on the road against the Eagles. If you're a Cowboys fan, do you feel very good about winning both those games? No, I think you probably split. I mean, they'll be favored over Washington. It's probably roughly a pick 'em, I would think, against the Eagles. And then the Cowboys play the Steelers. Then they go on the road against the Vikings. I mean, this is an awful schedule, by and large, that the Cowboys are going to get to play. But I just, at sitting at 2-4, I don't feel very good about them going, you know, down the stretch run of the season any better than 5-5. And so what's crazy is Andy Dalton gets $1 million if he takes the Cowboys to the playoffs. And I think there's a pretty good chance he's going to get $1 million, and he might only have to go 7-9 to do it. So the point is here, we got a lot of Cowboy fans who listen to this game. We got a big audience of people who listen to the podcast in Dallas. I wish I had something positive to say about Monday Night Football there, but I had absolutely nothing that I think is a really substantial takeaway other than you are awful. And I do think that Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals played pretty well. But to me, the only thing the Cowboys have had going for them all season is their defense. And it just completely, their offense, and it just completely disappeared with Andy Dalton. And so that's the big takeaway from the second Monday Night Football game. What I would say about the first Monday Night Football game is I think we have to recalibrate our expectations for the Bills. Now, I do think the Bills are going to win the AFC East because I think the Patriots are really bad. And I'm not buying in anymore to Cam Newton and everything going great for the Patriots as they sit at 2-3. But the last 2 weeks for the Bills have been pretty bad. The Titans dominated them on a Tuesday, and then they had 6 days to get over that loss and get ready for the defending world champs to come to their house in Buffalo. And the Chiefs took complete control of that game and physically dominated the Bills and posted over 200 yards, I think, was the final total. Let me pull up the box score in that game. But, I mean, it wasn't really ever a contest. And the Chiefs felt like they were in. I felt like the Chiefs were in complete control of that game throughout. And so when you go look behind the numbers, I mean, look, the Chiefs won by 9 points. Not obviously a massive difference there, but when you look at the box score, the Chiefs went up and down the field all night. I mean, 466 total yards against 206 total yards. That's a pretty substantial difference. I mean, that's about as bad as it gets in the NFL in terms of yardage differential. And if you're sitting out there and you're like, okay, well, they've got Patrick Mahomes, what's wild is the Chiefs didn't even really use Patrick Mahomes, at least very much. Mahomes was great, 21 of 26, made plays when he needed to. But the Chiefs ran the ball 46 times for 245 yards. And so 46 times for 245 yards, an average of over 5 yards per rush, that's a physical domination. And I think if you're a Buffalo fan taking a look at what's happened, this was a team that prided itself on its defense. And in the 4-0 run, the defense became subservient to the offense. And I think you also have to go back and look at the first couple of wins the Bills got. The Jets are awful, so beating the Jets by 10 really doesn't tell me anything. The Dolphins early in the season were not very great, so beating the Dolphins doesn't really tell me very much. The Rams have been good when they got to play the NFC East. They haven't been that great against anybody else. And the Raiders, I would say, is the best win that the Bills have so far. But what's happened to them against the Titans, got 42 hung on them and got beaten pretty outstandingly rough. And then the same thing is now happening with the Chiefs coming in and taking control of it. I mean, it's just an ugly, ugly situation. Not as ugly as all the Dallas Cowboy fans reacting in the crowds last night to Andy Dalton, but still really ugly for back-to-back weeks. And so you start to look forward and you say, okay, maybe we feel pretty good about ourselves in the NFC East. You get to play against the Jets. That should be a guaranteed win. And then from there, you get to go against the Patriots, and you can almost take complete control of this division. But then you got a lot of challenging teams still coming down the pike on that schedule. And I'm just not sure that the Bills are what we thought they were. I think they're good enough to hopefully be able to actually win a game in the playoffs for the first time since 1995. But I'm not sure anything else is going to be able to happen. And so those are the two big takeaways I would have in general. And I have to tell you, by the way, one of the great things about having fans present is watching all of the Dallas Cowboy fans as they were like, this is the most atrocious performance that I have seen in forever. I just almost think we need to have a story up at OutKick with just all the Dallas Cowboy fan reactions. Dub, you were watching this game, and we're going to talk, by the way, for those of you out there wondering, Danny G's on vacation right now for a couple days. We're going to talk to him in the next segment about the Dodgers. But fan reaction shots are oftentimes really great when the team stinks. The Dallas Cowboy fan reaction shots were absolutely next level in this game. They were just kind of switching back and forth and alternating between Jerry Jones looking uncomfortable, between Mike McCarthy with his mask on, and then everybody else in the crowd. It's like the Dallas Cowboy fans were just throwing up their hands as they couldn't find a way to throw the ball into the end zone. They had one incompletion after another, even after all the penalties. And it was like when it finally, you know, you finally have the opportunity to score a touchdown, you got sort of that derisive cheer from the crowd where it's like, hey, all right, well, we finally got a touchdown. And even Andy Dalton looked disgusted at the whole process. But these were unbelievable reaction shots.
Yeah, it was probably the best moments of the game because this was not a very competitive game, as we all know. Some of my favorite shots, though, are of Mike McCarthy, and this happens every week. They pan to Mike McCarthy, and he's just looking down, and he has his huge mask on.
Yes.
And he just looks like almost depressed. But it's like, regardless of how the game's going, he looks so serious and sad and angry at the same time. Every single shot that they show of Mike McCarthy, maybe it's the mask, maybe it's the big play call sheet, maybe it's the hat down low, but every single shot of him is the exact same, regardless of the week.
Yeah, I mean, and Cowboy fans, I think justifiably so, have a reputation as being sort of bipolar, right? They win a game and they're like, oh, we're on our way to the Super Bowl. They lose a game and it's woe is me. I mean, I'm not sure there's any fan base that reacts more substantially to one game, but this felt like that on steroids last night and their performance going up against what was a fairly mediocre, at least an expectation, for the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals are on the comeback trail to being a good team. They're not there yet, and the beatdown that they put on the Cowboys was unexpected in its excessiveness and in its severity.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Jay Glazer hanging out with us now to start off hour number three, as I told you he would be. Jay, I know you've watched a lot of Dallas Cowboy games over the years. Where does this rank in the Jerry Jones era in your mind in terms of about as low as it can get? I mean, I don't know that I can remember the Cowboys being in a worse position than they are as we wake up on Tuesday morning right now.
I've just never seen them hit by injuries the way they have. I mean, look, their strength is their offensive line. They have none left.
Yeah.
Now, then their strength is Dak Prescott. He goes down. For Zeke to be fumbling the way he does, their tight ends go down. The secondary goes down. Their linebackers go down. I mean, I've never seen a team this hit this hard by injuries this early on. And remember the lack of training camp they had also. So, you know, man, I don't have any answers for it. You know, normally you're looking and say, okay, are the injuries because they weren't able to train, or the injuries were, you know, because they just came off the couch and, you know, too many guys were quarantined and they didn't do anything at all. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I've never seen anything like it.
So a lot of people said, hey, there's a really talented wide receiver core here. We got CeeDee Lamb. We got Michael Gallup. We've got Amari Cooper. We saw the way the game ended with Andy Dalton coming in, throwing for a decent amount of yardage. He'll be able to step in. I think Jerry Jones basically made that argument his weekly radio show. And then the bottom fell out of this Cowboy offense. We already knew they had a bad defense. What happens now?
I don't know. They have no choice because they're still – atop the division. They can't just pack it up. They have no choice. And, you know, they've got to now look at it and say, okay, look, this is what our offensive line is. Like, there's nothing we can do. This is what the O-line is. So how are we going to adjust the offense for that? How are we going to make it quicker? It's, you know, they're getting Leighton Vander Esch back for their defense. At least helps them, you know, with somebody who can call the defensive plays and get guys lined up. It's a little bit different, I think, if you know, in a couple of weeks in with it, but they're still, even that, man, they're just so banged up there. And I think also, if you look at it, we all thought the Cowboys had this great personnel, and I think they had a lot of names. I don't know how great the personnel really was at this point. I do think Dak is – look, I don't know, you know, right now we're still kind of in the I know we're all saying it looks great, but we're still in the infection range, so you got to make sure he gets out of this. It's 10 to 14 days after the surgery to make sure he comes out with no infection, because that's what, you know, Alex Smith, he got the infection. They got to go back in, take out the hardware, all that. As long as he's good, they still intend to make him their future quarterback. They think, and for Dak, Dak's already in there telling the other quarterbacks, like, hey, it's 4 to 6 months. I'm going to be back in 3.5. But, you know, they have no choice right now but to sit there and go, okay, this is what our personnel is, and we've got to figure something else out. But they're basically playing with a second and third string offense against everybody else.
We're talking with Jay Glazer, Fox NFL analyst, jack of all trades, master of breaking news. Who wins the NFC East now? You just said you can't go ahead and, you know, and throw everything in and say we're going to focus on next year. Somebody has to win this division. Who would you make the favorite, and how many games do they need to win to win it?
Oh, my God. Like five? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
It's terrible, but that's why, look, all of them have shown some sort of fight along the way. And, you know, Dallas did by some comebacks. Philly, even though they lost it to Baltimore this week, they showed some, even though they're even more banged up. They're losing Zach Ertz now for, you know, looks like about a month. Miles Sanders for a few weeks. And, you know, but they have Carson Wentz, right? So Carson now needs to put that team on his back somehow, some way. The Giants showed some fight, you know, against Washington. Washington showed fight, and it was early on. But I think Washington's still in the midst of trying to change culture there and establish what a culture should be over there, because they had such a bad football culture for so long. It's not going to happen for Ron Rivera in just, you know, a few weeks. So your answer, the answer to the question is, I mean, any of them could take it. Somebody's going to have to step up in the last 5 weeks and take it. And look, a lot of times, and this is why I don't like to do hot seat stories, because a lot of times we have, you know, first half of the season, everybody talks about somebody getting fired, and we have had time and time again, or and it even happened with Ron Rivera down in Carolina, then all of a sudden Riverboat Ron was born and they reeled up a bunch, went to the playoffs, went to the Super Bowl, and if these teams start taking their personality with about 6 weeks to go, one of these teams with 5-6 weeks to go is going to have to find their personality and realize, hey, this is a we've got to step up above the rest of these guys, because it's just such a weak division. Somebody has to. I don't know the answer to it. I would think the talent is probably Philly because of their quarterback. But everybody in Philly needs to stop sulking about what they've become this year and you know, realize, hey, we still could be the king of the mountain over here.
We're talking to Jay Glazer. Okay, when you look at the picture right now of the NFL, we're through week six. Everybody has played at least five games. One of the big topics is what's going to happen with the Bucs. They were phenomenal, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, beating down the Packers. Do you think the Bucs should be considered where in the NFC right now? Should they be considered a favorite with what they did the Packers? I know they're 4-2 and the Packers are 4-1, and I know certainly that the Seahawks are 5-0, but the Seahawks don't have a defense at all. The Bucs to me look like a more complete team, and they've certainly got Brady, who, you know, most of the time, I know it didn't happen against the Bears, but most of the time you get him the ball late and give him a chance to win, he can pull it off.
You got to remember, too, guys like Tom Brady, they are a creature of reps. They need reps. Guys like, you know, him, Drew Brees, and we're looking at Drew, like, why is he struggling? Those guys aren't just, they're not like the Russell Wilson. Hey, we're just so, or Kyler Murray, we're just such athletic freaks so we could do something. Those guys need reps after reps after reps. They need to kind of outwork everybody. And they didn't have that, obviously, in OTAs or mini camps or training camp, or there's no preseason. So even as well as the Bucs are playing right now, we still have room to grow here with Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. They have two different philosophies. Like Bruce likes to just, man, he just wants to throw deep. He wants to gut you deep. That's what he cares about. He just wants to go, go, go. And Tom likes to kind of methodically gut you from the inside out. He wants to pick you apart underneath and inside, and then, yeah, he'll take some shots downfield. So I think those two guys are even kind of still finding their groove together. You know, Bruce saying, okay, we'll do some things that Tom likes over here, and we're going to hear you out more on that. And Tom saying, okay, I'm going to hear more Bruce, what he likes out. And those guys still have a way to go to grow, which I think is scary for the NFC. That's the long version for me of that's actually scary for the NFC. But defensively, I know we all talked about their offense going into the season. we're all, like, behind the scenes, we're talking about their defense and how their defense is just going to be, under Todd Bowles, just going to be a handful for everybody else.
I got a stat for you. Steelers 5-0, Ravens 5-1, Titans 5-0, Chiefs 5-1, Bears 5-1, Seahawks 5-0. You ready for it? The NFC East 5-18-1.
Yep.
I mean, it just is remarkable.
But when you said that all those teams, they have their star players, right? The Steelers this year now, they're healthy, right? The Seahawks, they're healthy. The Ravens, they're healthy. The Titans, they've had their stars up. You know, they lost Tyler Lewan, but, I mean, they have their quarterback and their running back and, you know, their receivers. And, you know, the NFC East has just been decimated by injuries. And at least for the two teams that we thought would vie for, which is the Cowboys and the Eagles. The Steelers, man, that's the team people need to worry about.
All right. So Ryan Tannehill, we were talking about this earlier in the week. Ryan Tannehill has arguably, since he got the starting job last season when the Titans were 2-4, he's arguably been as good of a quarterback as there is in the NFL. Can you remember a reclamation project like this before, where a guy has come off the basically dumpster, right? I mean, they found him when he had almost no value coming out of Miami, gets a $100 million contract. Is this going to change the way people think about franchise quarterbacks going forward, or is Tannehill just a tremendous outlier and there's almost never reclamation projects like this that are going to work going forward?
No, that's why people always go after reclamation projects, because coaches will always look at guys like, hey, I could turn them around.
Yes.
I'm the one who could do this. You know, that happens all the time. So with a guy like Ryan Tannehill was brought in to back up, you know, Marcus Mariota. But the thing about Tannehill is that his last year in Miami, they thought he was about to shine and become a star. They absolutely loved him down there. It was like when he went down, they had a similar reaction to how it was in Minnesota with Teddy Bridgewater. Loved Teddy up there. So both those guys, and look, with Arthur Smith is a name people need to really keep your ears out about. He's the offensive coordinator for the Titans. He's done such a good job there with Tannehill and Derrick Henry also. And, when GMs or owners look to hire somebody, a lot of times we hear about them wanting to hire offensive coaches. Because a lot of times you hire a defensive coach and they have a good offensive coordinator, well, you'll lose that coordinator to a head coaching opening in the next year or two. So if you can get an offensive-minded head coach, then he's there for years and years and you have that offense. He's a name that should be considered after this year.
As we look forward, we thought maybe the Bills at 4-0. And by the way, I agree with you, Arthur Smith. And to me, Arthur Smith calling the King Henry play there in overtime was just a guy feeling it play calling. I mean, they almost had 600 yards of offense. It's 3rd and 5. They put Derrick Henry into shotgun, and Vrabel said they were going to go for it on 4th down regardless. But, I mean, they just rammed it right in. And, I mean, it was an incredible way to end that game. Doubleheader Monday Night Football. We've talked a lot about the Cowboys. The Bills were sitting at 4-0, and a lot of people were saying, man, Josh Allen, shadow MVP candidate. He's kind of hanging around out there. They go on the road Tuesday, kind of a weird week, get drubbed by the Titans. They have 6 days to think about it, 6 days to get better. They got the world champs coming to their place, Kansas City Chiefs, and they got drubbed again, and they got physically beaten. Sean McDermott probably not going to like giving up 250 yards rushing, but what's your take right now on the Bills, contender or pretender?
No, contender. I think they'd be really good. Look, they ran into the world champs, and not only that, the Bills had to have two game plans at the exact same time because they didn't know, are we going to play
who they were playing? Yeah.
Are we going to play the Chiefs? When are we going to play them? And Sean McDermott, who is a really defensive, he's a really phenomenal defensive mind, he was just like, hey, no gripes. If we have to deal with. That's it. If we got to deal with. And, you know, the coaches who don't gripe about what's going on, just like, hey, this is our new normal, no problem. That's going to help your team out a lot. So, but it's still in the end, I mean, think about it. You have to, you know, split your time between two different game plans and two different teams. And, you know, I just think they went in there against the Chiefs. I mean, weather was terrible. That defensive of the Chiefs really brought it at Allen. I just think he had a very off night. but I think he's going to be a stud. I think he is going to be absolute stud. I'm a big believer in him. I'm a buyer of the Bills, definitely.
We're here with Jay Glazer, Fox NFL analyst. Final question for you. How does the NFL resolve the season going forward? Right now, they seem to have at least handled the COVID issues. Do they add another week to the end of the year? How do you think this thing shakes out schedule-wise for the NFL?
I don't think they want to, but if they have to, they have it there. But that's why, like, look, the Panthers, right, they test positive Monday. One Panther does, and they immediately go, okay, let's shut down for 2 days. Let's just shut it down, keep everybody isolated, make sure this thing doesn't spread, and that everybody's safe to play on Sunday. And I think they're going to continue to do that. Even like, look, the Titans, the league kind of put it out a couple, you know, weeks ago, like, oh, they're going to come down really hard. They and the players' union both sent, you know, attorneys down there to interview and find out, okay, why was there an outbreak with the Titans? What are these guys doing? And, you know, they turned it around in the last 2 weeks, like, all right, we're not really dropping the hammer. We just, man, people just got to understand you can't get lax with this thing because it could spread real fast, and we can't have that. So, you know, it's really going to be the responsibility of these teams to just continue to be, you know, over. They've got to almost be overprotective in order to really finish this season on time.
Jay Glazer, we appreciate the time, my man. Hope to talk to you again soon, and appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by the man, the myth, the legend, as you hear the walk-up music, Taylor Swift playing melodically in the background. That is Petros Papadakis' walk-up music. We are here in the Geico Outkick Studios getting ready for him. Petros, first of all, the Dodgers begin their quest to win the World Series tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays. How much of a enjoyable experience was the three straight wins of the Dodgers at the expense of my poor 10-year-old son's Atlanta Braves, the team that has been adopted by the Travis family household?
Yeah, I got a couple things to get to here. I understand the Travis family loving the Braves, or at least one of you guys, because the Braves, in so many ways, long before the Marlins or the Rays, which are going to be in the World Series, obviously, as they used to be the Devil Rays.
Like, yeah, long that was offensive, by the way. That was one of the first mascot names that had to be changed for offensiveness.
It's the Devil. You know,
yeah, right. I mean, it's Devils. Devils are serious stuff.
Yeah, Satan. Beelzebub.
Yes.
But the Braves are really the team of the South. I mean, you don't need me to tell you. You know, the whole TBS thing and Ted Turner. And they were on nationally. Like, there's people in California that love the Braves.
Just
They were on.
WTBS, you know, baby, back in the day. You could always watch them on the Superstation.
I remember hearing Harry Carey on WGN for the first time when I was homesick from school one day. And I was like, my God, this guy's drunk. This guy calling the game. I was like 9 years old. And I was right.
Yes.
It was amazing. So people love the Braves from all over the country because of that national deal. And they're a fun franchise. There's no doubt about it. And it was a great series back and forth. And the Dodgers, you know, they got a lot of pressure on them, a great deal of pressure, because they're just running on a blade. Nothing less than a World Series championship will satisfy the fan base. And they went down 3-1. So people were absolutely freaking out. We call it the Panic Brothers on our show, and we play all the old car alarms from the 90s and try to frighten people. I believe you would call it fear porn.
Yes.
But I do. Before I forget, I have to give you a shout-out. I was walking in my neighborhood, which, you know, it's an election year, and there's a pandemic, so you just don't know what you're going to run into.
No doubt.
And, you know, every house has a different sign, you know, whether it's a local city thing or a council thing or a Trump sign or a Biden sign or a science is real sign, and, you know, just the hate does not live here sign, or, you know, giant American flag, military house. Like, it's just a minefield.
Yes.
And a guy stopped me in the middle of the street 2 days ago, and he said, Petros, and I was like, oh, no, you know. And he said, I sit in my car every morning and I listen to you on Outkick with Clay Travis.
Oh,
my
name awesome.
My name is Steve the Lawyer. And I was like, oh, my God. God bless you, Steve the Lawyer. And he was out there doing his own lawn like a real man, which yeah. I am not, obviously. And I just had to say, and he was very, very impressed with you as a broadcaster.
Clearly has great talent, great eye for talent, Steve the Lawyer, who was shouting you out. I mean, I've always been impressed with Steve's acumen.
Yeah, well, he had some college-age daughters that came out, and one of them maybe graduated. One of them from Michigan State. The other one, I don't remember which college. But, you know, just lovely people. And I thought that they were going to scream at me for not wearing a mask. Or, you know, even though I try to stay away from people. But I just, you know, I'm a mouth breather, Clay, and it's
yes.
hard for me.
Yes.
I wear a mask, you know, in the store and at work and all the places I'm supposed to. But he didn't yell at me at all, and he didn't know anything about me other than Outkick, which was pretty great.
This is funny that you mentioned that because, one, I mean, that's all – for what we do, I mean, we talk to a lot of people, but you know this, and a lot of people out there listening may not. There's not anybody around while we're talking, right? So, I mean, you know, conceptually, and I know you do your road show every summer, and it's wildly successful all over L.A., and you guys are out and about, and it is fun to be able to do live shows, but a lot of what you do for radio, even though it's a public forum and event, is very not public, right? So it is
yeah.
always great to hear from people out there who are listening, and you know, you can meet them, and they might recognize your voice, or they recognize you, and they feel like they're connected to you because you know we talk to them in their car, we talk to them in their house while they're getting ready, whatever it is. And it's funny you mentioned that, and it's always gratifying. Joel was on the show last week, I think, and he was like, hey, he said, you know, I was going through LAX getting ready for going on the road to call a game. And he said, you know, when I gave the guy my ID and he looked at it, he was like, oh, I know you. I love the show. And Joel was like, oh, yeah, which show? And he's like, oh, you go on with Clay Travis. I love listening to that early in the morning. And Joel was like, you know, I also call the Fox lead college football game, which millions of people
yeah.
watch. And he associated me not with that, but he recognized my name from the radio show. And you hear that, I'm sure, from guests and also from other people. And that, anyway, that's just it's
well,
nice
no one ever recognizes. No one ever recognizes me or talks to me about
they
it.
Know your voice. I remember when I first started doing radio.
That was
surprising. Like you'd be in line at, you know, I don't know, getting a hamburger or something, and when you
yeah.
walked up and they heard your voice, they're like, oh my God, you know, it's like an alarm bell goes off in their head because
well,
they're
you know,
used
look,
to hearing you. They may not recognize you necessarily.
There's two schools of thought, you know, in the world of television, you know, people say, and you do kind of daily TV, and maybe you'll relate with this. In the world of television, they say that every day is just kind of a wash and you need to figure out big events and breaking news. And if you can hit a home run in those two, the other days just kind of go by the wayside. I've always felt like it was sort of the opposite in radio because the everyday is people's lives. It's your accompaniment to whatever they're doing. And sometimes you have to say the same thing 20 times or play a sound drop 5 times because, you know, people miss it. You know, they're putting on their seatbelt. They're screaming at somebody in another car. They're, you know, running into the store and getting a slushie.
Their kids are yelling in the back seat and they're like,
yeah.
hey, shut up. I'm trying to hear this. You know, like,
right.
yes.
So it's a very, and I take your point. You know, I've done radio now for 19 years and people, they have a personal relationship with you,
yes,
as the host, and they know you because it's kind of hard to hide who you are for 3-4 hours a day on the radio. If people listen to you every day, they actually know you really well. So it is an interesting thing. So I stood there and talked to that guy for like 25 minutes and was late to something and wasn't very popular around here because of it, but. Anyway, I wanted to tell you about Steve the Lawyer.
Well, I appreciate that. So let's talk about the Dodgers of L.A. They are now into the postseason. I know we've talked a lot about the Dodgers over the years on this show, and thanks for always coming on Tuesdays. They've been close. They haven't been able to grab the proverbial brass ring of being able to win the World Series. They are big favorites in this series against the Rays. does it feel like this is their year? I mean, the Mookie Betts plays three different spectacular catches. Cody Bellinger goes yard. I know he then threw his shoulder out celebrating, which seems like one of the all-time meathead moves. If you knew you had a weak shoulder, maybe don't celebrate in that form or fashion. But it just feels like their year now that they've come back from basically dead as a season.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about it. It's either win it all or everybody wants everybody fired. You can't imagine the rhetoric going on about Dave Roberts and Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. And hey, it's been a rocky road. And
Clayton,
been
great... I mean, Clayton Kershaw, I mean, sorry to cut you off, but his career is so star-crossed, it seemed like he was done for when they lost that game to go down 3-1, and now he's starting tonight.
Yeah, and it really is interesting, but at the same time, it's sort of a movie we've seen before. We've seen this be the best team. We've seen them win 8 straight division titles. We've seen a lot of great playoff heroics and ups and downs. And this year it feels more do or die than ever. But I agree with you. After seeing them come back from 3-1 and start to exploit a team and get to their bullpen and capitalize on their mistakes that the Braves made many when you listen to the baseball experts, especially on the bases.
No doubt.
You start to have a lot of belief. And Mookie Betts, that's what everybody was saying when the playoffs started. And it has been a long road for the Dodgers, and they are in a bubble. And I think you saw a lot of that emotion last night just from the feeling of getting over the hump from the team, and I think they feel a tremendous amount of pressure, most of all Dave Roberts. And I think overall, after seeing that comeback and knowing that they're far and away supposed to be the best team in baseball this year, you have to think optimistically. But this is the third World Series in 4 years that they've been to, and you know how the last two went since they've been on AM 570 LA Sports, your Los Angeles affiliate. And everybody talks about 1988, and that being the last year, obviously, the Dodgers won a world championship. And that year, the Dodgers were a lot like the Rays, kind of an underdog, a scrappy team with a hardcore pitcher like Oral Hershiser as a leader. And the
everybody
A's,
expected them to lose to the A's.
Yeah, the A's were the Dodgers. I mean, the A's were the Bash Brothers, Dennis Eckersley, Canseco, Mark McGwire. So it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition there. But I would imagine the Dodgers would be favored, and they'll all get skewered like Souvlakia in Greece if they don't win it.
We're talking to Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports, as he just mentioned, the Dodgers affiliate. So let's dive into to the big picture here. I love there being crowds present again. They're playing down in Arlington, Dallas area. You've talked about for a long time how you're looking forward to fans being able to be back in Chavez Ravine. The Dodgers are taking over this stadium. The cost for tickets have skyrocketed. There are probably people listening to us right now, maybe, it wouldn't shock me at all, driving to LAX right now to get on an airplane to fly to Dallas so they can go watch the Dodgers play. They're not allowed to get in their car and drive across LA, but they can drive to LAX, get on a plane. I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? But I don't know that there's going to be anybody who is a Rays fan in this stadium. It's all going to be Dodger fans.
And the parking lot at Chavez Ravine, which is ironically, well, maybe it's not irony, but it's still owned by Frank McCourt, the guy that baseball ran out of a job.
Yes.
The ex-owner.
It's like
Dodgers.
The best business ever, right, for what he pays. I've been in that parking lot. Like, I mean, he's just making a mint on that.
Yeah, you have to be a billy goat to move around it, and none of the numbers are sequential, but we love it for what it is. But they've set up like a drive-in theater out there.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest parties in LA.
That does sound pretty fun, actually. I mean, like, you know, if you have a, you know, kids especially, or you're just looking for a cool social event, that does sound like a pretty fun idea.
Yeah, and you know, I know there were people giving away contests, not us, but there were people flying people out to Dallas and going out to the NLCS. So
that does seem
right.
Kind of crazy, right? I mean, that you can get on a plane and go to Dallas and go to the game, but you can't drive in your car and go watch it in the main Dodger Stadium.
Well, it's just part of what, you know, this whole thing that we've been dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do a football game on Saturday night. And
that's right.
these coach. It'll be San Jose State hosting Air Force at 7:30 Pacific. Let's go, Clay. Stay up late for P. Only till 10:30 your time. You'll be fine.
Are you excited, by the way, to get back in the booth like that?
Yeah, that's my job. And,
yep.
You know, the kids are going to play, and it's my job to call the game and try to celebrate the kids and give them an honest call and enjoy college football for what it is. Try not to take myself too seriously. You know, that's our style. I'm going to do a bunch of Mountain West games, it seems, in the first couple weeks. I get to know a new conference, and I'm looking forward to it. I couldn't be more excited. I hope I pass my COVID test at Fox.
I know that feeling. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, we're getting started, but at the same time, like all of these coaches that I've talked to this week and it's not their fault, but they've said things like, you know, well, we got to do what's best for the kids and health wise, you know, if they were a coach at some other conference, they'd be saying something completely different. They'd be getting ready to play Middle Tennessee or something. You know how it is. So, It's interesting. Everybody kind of understands, and I think I've used this before, the regional rhetoric that's involved, that some things that go some places just don't go in others. I mean, you look at the game I'm doing, it's a Mountain West game. A lot of people might not have a bunch of interest in it, but San Jose State's been able to practice for 10 days.
Yep.
And they had to go off campus to practice for 10 days in a Humboldt State way up in the Redwoods, in the lost coast of California, because they're, like I am, in one of the most locked down counties in the country. Up in the Santa Clara, San Jose area.
Yep.
So, and Air Force, they've been practicing every day since August.
Yep.
And they run an option. You know, I mean, that's a tough, and it's just, it's regional. And it's a tough balance, but I commend everybody for just picking up and dusting themselves off and getting after it, you know, whatever the incongruities are.
Outstanding stuff as always, Petros Papadakis. We will talk to you next week. Hopefully the Dodgers will be making a serious run at the first title since 88 by the time we talk next.
Let's go Dodgers, Clay. I know you're excited about the boys in blue. Come on.
I would like to see the Dodgers win it now that they've eliminated the Braves because I have met a lot of people who are pretty fantastic in L.A., and everybody seems to root for the Dodgers, so I'd like for them to be happy. I really would. Appreciate the time, my man, and we'll talk to you next week.
City would be alive with pleasure. Like a Newport cigarette.
There you go. What a line.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.